The one-eyed man's kindly dark brown pupil was surrounded by creases in his skin that I imagined had been shaped by smiles and looks of concern. He could have illustrated an ad for the miracles of plastic surgery, because his lone eye looked out from the center of his forehead without any hint of scarring from an operation. A tall man, close to 7 feet, he wore a towering white hat to mark his authority over the dozens of people sweating before ovens, boiling pots, and frying pans. Waiters balancing trays rushed in and out, and I savored the scent of the delicious cuisine and wondered how the mafia could employ such an expert chef to run this extensive kitchen. The chef shed his white apron and hat and gestured for me to follow him. Dark hair grew in furry clusters on his naked body, and I realized that I too wore nothing. I must have forgotten to dress when I left the apartment that morning, but I had no recollection of waking, looking in drawers and closets for clothes, or even of my usual breakfast of milk and cereal. Fortunately, no one gave us a second look as I hurried after him in the busy excitement of the kitchen. He led me through a door, down a hallway decorated with scenes of gondolas and ancient buildings reflected in the water that would one day swallow Venice like a large fish preying on a smaller one, and at last opened a frosted glass door and brought me into a steam room with benches of worn marble. Hot, billowing mist filled the room. I could see the bottom half of a man of more normal size, dipping a wooden ladle in a bucket and pouring water that sizzled on the scalding rocks in a heater. A white splint covered his right forearm, and he poured with his left hand. The chef picked up a white towel, and I did the same. When he sat on the towel instead of wrapping it about his waist, I did that too. "Comfortable?" asked my host. "Yes, I'm fine," I replied, feeling the heat draw sweat from every pore. The other man had stopped wetting the stones and vanished into the steam on the highest level of the marble seats. The chef and I remained on the lowest level. I could see his eyes studying me through the clouds of steam. "I hope you don't mind the informal surroundings." "Not at all," I assured him. I wanted to be agreeable and make a good impression, although I wasn't certain why. He rubbed one hand over his large jaw with its dark stubble of whiskers, and the other over the glistening bald dome of his skull. "You know why I like it here?" "It's a nice room," I said, not wanting to show that I had no idea. "Very old, elegant."
"Because it's like the kitchen."
"Yes?"
"Hot. I've come to like the heat. I've spent my entire career in what might as well be a furnace. Hot as hell," he said with a grin. "But what you have to realize is that after a few years, you don't feel it the same way. You acclimate. What once seemed scorching becomes comforting and familiar. The nice thing about the steam room is that it's quiet."
"Not as hectic as the kitchen?" I said.
"It's a good place to consider things."
"Yes?"
I tried to be affirmative, but I could hear the question in my tone. "Yes, all sorts of things." He closed his eye and squeezed his forehead in his hand. "There's so much to think about, and it's not always clear, but you know this."
"What are you thinking about now?" I asked.
"Of course, your dossier, for one thing."
"My dossier?" The odd-sounding word made me uneasy. It belonged to bureaucrats, apparatchiks who cared only for the great machine of the state.
"I reviewed it carefully. I appreciate," he said with a nod of his head, "the thoroughness with which you filled out our questionnaire."
I couldn't remember filling out anything.
"You don't have the dossier here?" "No, no, it's kept with the files. The key point is that you want the job."
"Of course," I answered, concealing that I didn't know what job he meant.
"To be second command is no easy thing."
"Ha!"
This jeering interjection came from the man hidden in the steamy heights. The chef waved an open palm to show that I should ignore the intrusion.
"Why is it,"
he asked,
"so difficult to be second?"
"Everybody wants to be the boss," I said.
"Do you?"
What answer did he want? I couldn't take long to respond because he would see my uncertainty.
"At the right time."
"Oh my!"
This from the invisible man above us.
"And what time is this?" the chef asked encouragingly.
"Time for a change," I said.
"Yes, certainly. You wouldn't be here otherwise, and I am sorry to hear about your troubles."
"Which troubles?" I asked.
"At work," he nodded, "and at home, too."
"I'm hoping for the best."
"Good, very good. And how long have you been interested in this position?
Since I first heard about it.
How did you hear about it? He asked.
I listened very carefully. Did I see the brow above that single eye wrinkle in the briefest frown?
Had I jeopardized my chance of getting the job?
I couldn't be sure, but he continued.
What did you feel when you imagined applying for the position, when you had the fantasy of actually being a member of our staff?
It was a thrill I can't quite describe, and to be truthful, I was a bit afraid, because the position is challenging. I know I can do it, but something new and important like this frightened me.
How many years were you at the CIA?
I hadn't the faintest idea, but I had to answer. The limit.
That's good. What did you like best about the training?
I can't imagine a more thorough training.
Everything was covered, and I mean everything, I repeated, stressing the word. In particular, what in your training prepared you to be a sous chef?